One of the loveliest discoveries that we make, I think, when we begin to embrace this possibility of living from a place that we could call the sanctuary of love, is that it is a place not only of good humor, which is a seriously underrated virtue. It is a seriously underrated virtue. Imagine if we praised and praised and applauded and had special coaching for our children as well as for ourselves, but particularly for ourselves, in the art of good humor. Imagine if we all went to re-education camp, which in a way a retreat is, sorry to say. Because we're not only embracing the possibility of good humor, and if you wonder whether good humor is of real value, then just think about how exhausting it is to be in the presence of bad humor, whether it's your own or other people's. It's exhausting. It's debilitating. It's a most dreadful waste of a life. But the other quality, of course, is humor. The other quality that I think bubbles in this fountain, and the fountain, the sanctuary of love, is humor. Being able really to see some of our difficulties not too solemnly, even to approach some of them with lightness of heart. So, for example, and this is an example that I hope will resonate with you, your life, your own life, your very life, can I say it more emphatically? I don't think so. Your very life, your Jenny life, your Yvonne life, your Diane life, your very life, your Peter life, your very life is a treasure house of experiences. You have wisdom that would make Solomon want to lie down and have a rest, even to think about it. You have so much wisdom from the experiences that you have already had, some of which you might hope never, ever to have again. And yet, the curious thing is that we often do repeat what exhausts us. Well, I do. Maybe you don't. But we often do. We often think that we can write a new ending by doing the same things, by thinking the same thoughts, by telling ourselves the same narrative that has not served us particularly well in the past. And one of the most useful questions we can ask ourselves is, have I done this before? And if you find yourself laughing uproariously, feel very grateful, because this is a vital step in not doing it again. Have I done this before? Only 4,000 times in the last year. So this quality of humor and lightness of heart, bringing some lightness to these most serious of questions, is sometimes playful enough for us to see the situation differently. And that's what we need. Now, I want to tell you another story. I want to tell you a story that is a story that has been told to us about the Buddha, the historical Buddha Shakyamuni, and we know that this story has been told countless times, not least at Mana. And how perfect is that? Because we haven't told it today, Easter Friday, 2014. So, each of you here today is on a pilgrimage. You are seeking, I'm presuming to know, you are seeking gifts. You are seeking support. You are seeking insights for this very moment in your life. Some of you were able to mention that yesterday evening when we put our objects, the external objects of our internal longing, onto the altar. And some of you said with courage and frankness that you are seeking. We are all seeking. We are all longing. We are all longing for the insight that reminds us of what we know, how we came to know it, and how this will serve us going forward. We are on a pilgrimage to know ourselves more deeply, and we are on a pilgrimage to know what life is more truthfully. And what a privilege this is. What a privilege it is to bring our conscious selves to this, rather than just hoping that enlightenment descends upon us. We are actually engaging with it. We are asking questions. We are bringing our bodily self into the questioning and the churning and the discernment and the sacred listening. So, let's assume that the Buddha's monks were also on a lifelong pilgrimage of understanding, of sharing, of embodiment, of gratitude. I think we can assume that. And why can we assume it? First, because they were attracted to live in the presence of someone whose very name means awake. Awake to what? Awake to what we've just been talking about. Awake to who you are and what your gifts are, not because you deserve them, but because you have them, because they are your isness. They are your beingness. Yeah? That's what the Buddha came awake to. He called it awake to Buddha nature. We could call it awake to soul consciousness. You are awakening on your pilgrimage. Okay, so how thrilling it must have been to live in the presence of the enlightened one, the Buddha, just as it must have been so thrilling to live in the presence of Jesus. And yet, we know that on this very day, the day that we celebrate today, not on this very day, 2,000 or so years ago, even those people who had kept closest company with the Enlightened One, out of fear, betrayed. So please, when you forget, don't be hard on yourselves. Just remember. Is what I say clear? That in the hours before Jesus was crucified, even those who had lived in the loveliness of his most divine presence. Were gripped by fear, were flooded by fear, and betrayed him. But we also know they got over it, and so do we. And I think that there's a humanness in that story, which was not a story that I'd in any way planned to tell, so it's helpful to me too. It's helpful to me too that this pilgrimage that we're on is not just a straight path. It's not a straight path. Sometimes it's a really rocky path. And sometimes we'll let ourselves down so badly, and that doesn't matter. All that matters is the rising up. All that matters is the rising up. All that matters is the rising up. Okay, so we're back to the Buddha and his monks. So they were sent out across dusty India to share the good news. And then they came back to their sanctuary of love, their physical sanctuary of love, because, of course, they carried the sanctuary of love with them at all times. And there is actually no other place but the sanctuary of love. And the Buddha asked them three questions. And they're such profound questions, I want to bring them to you today. The first question was, are you well? This is a question of great self-responsibility. And it's not a question about physical robustness. It's a question about attitude. Attitude. It's a question about your willingness to embrace life with all its vicissitudes. It sets us up to think about wellness really differently. And it sets us up to know that we become increasingly well the more awake we are. That we can have a moment of sublime wellness as we draw the last breath. That the most well thing we may ever do is in that moment. And that when we pray at the end of our meditation time, and if you take this practice home with you, may I be well and happy. And then we pray for those situations that we care deeply about, or which we find deeply troublesome. May they be well and happy. And then we let our minds circle the whole universe, the whole physical universe, and maybe not just the physical universe. May we be well and happy. We are talking about a kind of happiness that is not just about being pleased. Just as the wellness that we're talking about is not just about, you know, physical robustness. It's about attitude. Are you well? Are you wishing others well? Are you wishing yourself well? And this is very, very crucial in forgiveness also, forgiveness of yourself and forgiveness of others. When we cease to wish another harm, we are very far on the pilgrimage of forgiveness. We have no right ever to wish another person harm. We have every right to separate ourselves from situations that harm us and where we are not wished well. we have every right to separate ourselves from situations where we are not wished well. And we need to audit our own thoughts sometimes. Are we wishing ourselves well? Really. It's a vital part of growing up, to be quite honest with you. You don't have much spiritual maturity without it. I hope that doesn't sound harsh, but I feel it very strongly. And I can't know if you ever have an opportunity to hear this, or if I have another opportunity to say it. That at the very least, you owe this gift of life, is to wish yourself well and to wish others well. It's a profound thing. It's healing in the deepest meaning of that word. And in your acts of forgiveness, to recognize that you can wish the other person well. It does not mean reconnecting if they have harmed you. And that you can wish yourself well even if you are deeply ashamed of something that you have done. Shame is a good thing sometimes to recognize, but we don't want to stay in that place. We want to learn from it and move on, so that what we are generating is not shame, but a sense of life's abundance. So, out of one little question, three words, I think. Are you well? It's a good question to ask yourself. It's a very good question to follow with a lot of silence. Allow the small, still voice within to let you know what needs attention. Use your journal to know what needs attention, to know what aspect of your life needs compassion, softening, tenderness, courage, strength, audacity, reclaiming. The second of the Buddha's exquisite questions. Truly, I'd like to write a whole book on the Buddha's three questions. Do you have enough to eat? Now, this is a very, very, very interesting question also in the 21st century, because we have, on the external level of living, we have a very serious, very serious imbalance. We have millions of people who are physically, desperately undernourished. And we have many people, millions, who are apparently physically overnourished, but are spiritually undernourished. This whole question of nourishment is again very, very powerful. I think it also brings us into intimate, intelligent thinking about our relationship to the earth and our relationship to our own bodies. Some of you are actually going to have body treatments here while you're at Mana. And each of our practitioners here at Mana is highly conscious that when the body is treated, so is the soul. That you are being treated from a place of soul. and that we need to treat our own bodies also from a place of soul. But we also need to treat the body that we share, which is the earth. But actually, we also share our bodies. We share our bodies, not just intimately, but we share our bodies through gesture, through smiling, through withdrawing, through coming closer, through the way that we give food, through the way that we give an instruction, through the way that we speak to one another. Our bodies are instruments. How are we feeding them? And, of course, how are we feeding the mind? You know, I've already mentioned that I have a problem with patience. And sometimes now, my patience is rather tested, and I become a bit testy. That's a good word. A bit testy. When people say they have no time for thinking about life, thinking about their behavior, making choices, because most people have quite a lot of time for the television, for texting, for email, even for the pokey machines, or for other distractions that take us out of life. For whatever we value most, we have a lot of time. We have a lot of time for what we value most. It doesn't take more time than the time we have to remember who we are and to remember how to nourish ourselves. And even, and perhaps more potently, more dramatically, to remember how we feel when we are well nourished. If you're listening to this talk weeks or months from now, and you've heard it before or you haven't heard it before, I want you to remember how you felt when you first heard it, how you felt when you felt nourished, and why you're not giving yourself whatever is needed to keep well nourished. How can we nourish the world? How can we heal the world? Isn't that why we're here? I don't know why else we're here. How can we do this? How can we heal ourselves if we're not well nourished? And if we don't celebrate the body in which we make these discoveries and honor it and respect it and are tender towards it and wish it no harm. And also the mind, this unfathomable, what a wonderful word, unfathomable. You know, the ocean, we talk about fathoms, don't we? How many fathoms deep is the ocean? I don't know. Does anyone know? So how much deeper is the mind? It's the mind that is unfathomable. And how often do we reach from the surface of the mind into its depths in order to bring up its own treasures? Rabindranath Tagore, our true life lies at great depth within us, not within someone else, not within the spiritual teacher that you most admire. Our true life lies at great depth within us. The third of the Buddha's questions, and after this we'll take a break so you can really think about the Buddha's questions in your life. This is such a good question. Well, of course it's a good question. It apparently came from the Buddha. Are you dwelling in harmony? And how? I think that is such a confronting question.
Oh.
You'd almost think, do I have to? Do I have to? We all have our deeply well-rehearsed reasons why we are not living in harmony, and why we cannot, and why we should not, and, goodness me, why we will not. Many of us, at some time, are out of harmony with ourselves. And we project this disharmony into our closest relationships. And we project the source of our irritation onto other people. And then we find them awfully irritating. In fact, we find them intolerable. And, you know, some people are pretty intolerable, has to be said. So we spend cautious time with them. If we are having to spend time with someone who profoundly disrupts our harmony through their own entrenched disharmony, I think we are right to spend limited time with them. However, I also think that it is our honor. It is our privilege, it is our birthright to pray that they will find greater harmony and peace in their lives. I think it is our responsibility not just to surround them with our criticisms and dissatisfaction, but to pray, may they be well and happy. May they know peace, so that all our thoughts about them are not generating greater disharmony within ourselves. Do you see that? And that's as true about people who are in our personal lives as it is about political leaders or people with a lot of power, apparent power. We also have a lot of power. We have the power to pray, not to impose, but to pray and to surround them with the energy of goodwill. Because we feel it in our own body. We feel it in our own self. Our body is our barometer. Our precious bodies are our barometers of what is disrupting our harmony or not. Just think now with me for a few moments. No, don't think. Experience now with me for a few moments how peaceful the body can feel. I don't even need to remind you that you don't feel this peace at all times. So building up that wellspring of wellness, that spring of wellness. So that when your thoughts go towards those situations, it is not just the energy of anxiety, but it is the energy of may you be well. It is the energy of may we live in peace. It is the energy of do no harm. It is the energy of healing of ourselves and others, because In this you are also recognizing. And this, I think, underpinned the Buddha's third question. You are also experiencing and emanating your understanding of the truth of interbeing. So when the question is, are you in harmony with yourself? It actually means, are you in harmony with the whole world? Remember that the Buddha was well-versed in, well-trained in, utterly familiar with the Hindu scriptures, which are the most profound teachings on interbeing. See yourself in others and others in yourself. So that as you grow in harmony, so you will express harmony where you go. As you go, you will express harmony. As you grow in harmony, you will express harmony. But before you can allow that, there will, I suspect, need to be acts of conscious reconciliation within yourself. You will need to accept yourself. You will need to accept all that you've learnt, particularly all that you have learnt the very, 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 very hard way, through what you might have called mistakes. When you can begin to retrieve what you've learnt from your mistakes, I'm very fortunate. I've made an awful lot. Truly. I have made an awful lot. I'm quite sure I'll make many more. Though I hope not exactly the same ones. That would be particularly galling, wouldn't it? And there's a huge variation on the theme, so I think there's plenty that I haven't yet. And every one of our mistakes is actually the same one, and I'll talk about that more tomorrow. It's about forgetting. It's about forgetting who we are. It's about forgetting that we can reconcile. It's about forgetting that we can accept. It's about accepting our complexity and also accepting our simplicity. It's about stepping up so that it's not just other people who are taking on the pilgrimage of love, but it's us. We know our shortcomings. We're not so familiar always with theirs. Sometimes we're over-familiar with them. But generally speaking, we know our shortcomings so well. And we need to balance our shortcomings with our long longings. Because it is our longings that will take us on this pilgrimage. There is no failure in the search for God. There is no failure. There is no failure in the learning to come awake. There is no failure in the learning to be well. There is no failure in the learning to be happy. There are experiences on the path, some of which we welcome, some of which we recoil from. some of which we generate, some of which feel imposed. From all of them, we can learn what it means to be human. From all of them, we can learn what it really means to be kind. From all of them, we can learn what most disrupts our harmony and also what will heal it, which does not mean ignoring our sorrows, ignoring our griefs. On the other hand from that, quite opposite to it, as we grow in wellness, as we grow in courage, we can actually meet those sorrows. With a braver heart. We can actually meet others' sorrows with a more truthful heart. We won't be pretending to ourselves that some people deserve to suffer and others do not. We won't be pretending that at all. We will understand that in this life we do suffer, but also that we can make choices, that we will not willingly harm, and that where we can, we will bring ourselves into a sanctuary of love through our conscious daily remembering. Through our courageous opening of the heart. And most of all, through our personal experience of knowing that this is not something that we attend to on our own. It would be intolerable. We attend to it and to ourselves and to one another in the presence of one another, in the presence of the inspiration that is outpouring to all of us, and in the presence of God. Om Shanti.